So we're all familiar with the Ten Commandments, and we kind of have a gist of how they came to be, you know, thanks to the Hebrew Scriptures. But there's a little bit more behind the story, because the second time that Moses goes up to Mount Sinai, remember he went the first time, he came down, he saw that they had constructed this golden calf, he gets all in a tither, and he throws the commandments down, and they become shattered. So the next day he has to go back up. And what's not in the Scriptures is the conversation that takes place between Moses and God, because the Lord says, "So Moses, how's it going?" And Moses says, "You know, Lord, to tell you the truth, I've had it. I'm just fed up. I've had it up to here with those people down there. All they do is cry and moan and complain about everything. And yesterday I come down, they have that stupid golden calf down there. This whole thing has just given me a death of a headache." And so the Lord looks at Moses and says, "Moses, you just need to relax. And as far as your headache is concerned, here, take these two tablets and call me in the morning." Today we cover the last of the two commandments, lying and coveting. But to help us gain an appreciation of the underlying message of these commandments, I first want to speak to you about the gospel according to Carlo Lorenzini. And everybody sitting here saying, "Who the heck is Carlo Lorenzini?" Well, Carlo Lorenzini happens to be the author of The Adventures of Pinocchio. And yes, I do refer to that story as gospel because it brings with it an important element of good news, and it is loaded with all kinds of metaphysics. We have all heard of Pinocchio. At the very least, we remember that he was a puppet that when he told lies, his nose would grow. But there's so much more to this story than that. Pinocchio was a puppet created by a man named Geppetto. And Geppetto had this powerful dream to one day have a real son of his own. And one night, as he was drifting off to sleep, he looked through the window and gazed upon a star at night. And he expressed his dream to the star, knowing that there was no way it could ever possibly happen. Or so he thought. But the star heard that dream and took the form of a fairy and came and visited Geppetto's house and went up to Pinocchio and with a tap of its magic wand brought Pinocchio to life. But the magical story doesn't end there. Pinocchio was just overjoyed that he could walk and talk like a real boy. But he knew he still wasn't a real, real boy. And so that became his dream. And the fairy made a promise to him, "Pinocchio, one day you'll become a real boy with flesh and blood. But first you have to prove that you are brave and true." And before leaving, the fairy gives Pinocchio a really special gift, a cricket, which is to serve as a guidance, a voice of wisdom for Pinocchio as he moved along his journey. Well, the next morning when Geppetto saw Pinocchio walking and talking, he couldn't believe it. He was so filled with joy. He didn't get it. He didn't understand how it happened, but it made absolutely no difference to him whatsoever. He loved Pinocchio dearly, and he did everything he could to celebrate this incredible gift of life. And as an expression of his love, he went out and he sold his warm coat so that he would have enough money to buy school books for Pinocchio as he was to embark upon his journey. And so Pinocchio, along with his faithful pal, the cricket, heads off for school and twice becomes distracted. And each time the cricket is pleading with him, begging with him to stay the course, not listen to the allurings, the attractions that were coming at him. But Pinocchio turns a deaf ear and at one point actually places his cap over the cricket to muffle him out and drown him out. And on both times, Pinocchio gets into very serious trouble. On the first occasion, he ends up getting locked in a cage And the fairy reappears and goes to him and says, what's going on? How did this happen? Pinocchio was too embarrassed because he thought if he were to tell the truth, it would make him really look bad. So he begins to make up a story and he tells lies. And as he's telling the lies, his nose is growing longer, longer, and longer, and longer. Well, talk about looking bad. Pinocchio notices that and comes around and starts to tell the true story. And as he does, his nose returns back to its normal shape and form and size. And then the fairy frees Pinocchio, and he and the cricket again go off on their merry way. And they don't get very far, and this time they are distracted again, this time by a coachman who approaches Pinocchio and tells him of a place called Paradise Island, a place where there already is in existence absolutely everything and anything that a little boy could ever want. And again, the cricket's going crazy, saying, don't listen to this guy. But Pinocchio again ignores the cricket and goes off to Paradise Island. And he's not there all that long when all of a sudden a big pair of floppy donkey ears come floating out of his hat. And he and the cricket look around and they come to realize that little boys that go to Paradise Island eventually get turned into donkeys. And so, obviously being terrified, they break out of there and they run away from Paradise Island. And now Pinocchio sets off in search of his father, Geppetto, who wasn't at home because Geppetto had been concerned about Pinocchio and was off looking for him. And Pinocchio's search takes him to the sea. And without thought, he dives into the ocean in search of his father, Geppetto. But soon he's swallowed up by a big whale. And when he gets to the belly of the whale, there is Geppetto. And Pinocchio has the idea, Father, let's build a fire. It'll make the whale burp and cough us up. And so they do that, and the plan works. And the whale coughs them up onto the shore. And Geppetto and the cricket are absolutely fine. But they come upon Pinocchio, who's lying face down in a pool of water. And for all appearances, he's dead. But the fairy makes yet another appearance. And this time, with a tap of the wand, she not only restores Pinocchio to life, but she transforms him into a living, breathing, real boy with flesh and bones. And she tells Pinocchio, you have proven yourself to be brave and true, and so now you are a real boy. Lying. What an interesting, fascinating aspect of human behavior. I mean, think about it. It exists. People do it all of the time, notwithstanding that it is a universal human value to be truthful and to tell the truth. We raise our children emphasizing to them that they need to not lie, that they need to tell the truth, that they need to be truthful. We tell them the story about George Washington and the cherry tree. We tell them the story of Pinocchio and other fables that emphasize the power, why it's so significant to be truthful, to tell the truth. When I was a boy and my mother wanted to be sure that I was telling the truth, she made me take a vow. She made me take an oath. She would say, say honest to God. And if I pronounced those words, she was cool. She was comforted. I remember a time when I was dating this girl in high school. And I don't know what brought it up, but at one point she turned to me and she said, don't ever lie to me, Michael. If you don't want to go out anymore, or even if you're mean to me, but please, 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 I ask you never to lie to me. And I could still feel the passion with which she communicated that message. And of course, back when I was a small boy in a Catholic grammar school, we were taught that lying, even those little white lies that we might tell to save somebody's feelings on occasion, were sins, venial sins, small sins. but they were sins nonetheless. And then we have coveting. Well, the way the commandments were taught to us, it was understandable that we would come away with the impression that coveting was a really bad thing. But as Eric Butterworth points out in his book, all coveting really is an intense passion, an intense desire for something. And it is the object of our desires that determines whether or not it is something that is bad or good. So for our purposes, it is whether or not that which we covet leads us along continuing on our spiritual path, or it takes us off into some other direction. And the Ten Commandments, which really are the development of consciousness 101, or the development of consciousness with training wheels, the commandment had a very explicit list. You should not covet your neighbor's house, your neighbor's wife, your neighbor's servant, your neighbor's goods, your neighbor's ox, your neighbor's donkey. I mean, what the heck was left, right? But this commandment carried with it an underpinning that if you are busy pursuing and being passionate about anything other than a closer communion with the oneness, then really what you are doing is engaging in a form of idolatry. So what's the relationship between lying and coveting? Well, again, it's the object of our desires, the objects that we covet. Because if there are things that lead us along the right path, on our spiritual path, then there's no relationship. The relationship then is between coveting and truth. But if we begin to covet things that distract us, that lead us away from maintaining our physical work, then coveting and lying become partners in crime. They're kind of held together at the hip. And lying becomes a tool that is used by our act of coveting. If you've been watching television lately, have you seen the inundation of TV ads around the whole political scene? Aren't you just so sick and tired and fed up of watching these things one after the other? But they serve as a useful example this morning, because what's going on is the candidates are coveting a political victory. They're coveting a political office. And if we were to do a deep dig down, we would probably decide what they were really coveting is trying to develop some sense of self-worth. But instead of standing up and speaking their truth, this is who and what I am, they're really more concerned in engaging in distasteful acts of character assassination, trying to ascend on the destruction of somebody else. And the fact that so many of them are just adding to the polarization and the divisiveness of the country is apparently of little or no consequence to them. And so the real victims in the whole thing would be anybody who buys into this nonsense. And to the extent we might be tempted to buy into that nonsense, it's to that extent that we are bearing false witness. Eric Butterworth points out that when we covet something somebody has, it's with the mistaken notion that what he has is the reason for who he is. But you cannot be somebody else. You cannot even be like somebody else. You could only be you, and you could never, ever be happy if it's built on some sort of an imitation. But getting back to our friend Pinocchio and the metaphysics of the story, Pinocchio had this dream. He wanted to become real. And whether you realize it or not, we all share in this dream. That's the reason that we are here. We all covet that experience of becoming a living, breathing expression of the oneness or the Christ within. And for Pinocchio, it involved going to school. For us, it involves doing the work and working the spiritual principles. And when Pinocchio embarked upon his journey, he allows himself to get distracted, and again, he ignores the gift, this incredible gift of wisdom that has been provided for him. And when we get distracted, we do the same thing. We ignore that inner wisdom that each and every one of us has to guide us along our spiritual journey. And frequently, we just start stopping, listening to that still small voice within. For Pinocchio, this happened on two occasions. How many times have we allowed this to happen in our lives? An even better question, how many times have we allowed this to happen even when we knew better? How many times have we allowed ourselves to be fooled, then only to pretend that we were not fooled, and continuing to build stories around the mess that we sometimes are so tempted to create? For Pinocchio, on both occasions, he was lured by the appeal of not having to do the work because there was a shortcut. And that's how he ends up at Paradise Island. And Paradise Island is just such a beautiful metaphor for heaven. And we all want to go to heaven, right? I mean, we all want to ascend to that level of consciousness where at long last our real, true inner light can be allowed to burn freely and fully. But sometimes we take those shortcuts. And maybe we really don't want that light to burn brightly. Maybe we're afraid of our light. And so maybe sometimes those shortcuts that we take to get there are really efforts on our part to sabotage the whole operation because we're so concerned that the identities, the masks that we have put on, are going to be changed and altered in some way. It becomes a little spooky. In the story, Pinocchio is given all of the help he needs. Metaphysically, the fairy represents spirit who comes to him, rids him of his strings, and he is no longer bound and confined. He is free to go on his pursuit to become a real boy. All of us are gifted with a similar type of grace. So if we are feeling bound and confined and thwarted in any way, shape, or form, we really have to question ourselves and ask ourselves, might it be because we have conjured up a story that we have become coveting something else? We've become passionate about something else that is just leading us off into some other direction. Coveting is not a curse. Coveting is not bad. Coveting is a blessing. Coveting is a gift. Coveting is the energy that allows us to tap into divine substance and bring into the world a manifestation of what we really, truly, deeply desire. And we have the complete freedom how we wish to use it. But we should do so with the understanding that if we use it in a way that points us in the wrong direction, there always are consequences. For Pinocchio, it ended up being an extended nose and a pair of donkey ears. For us in our lives, it frequently shows up in things like loneliness, estrangement, alienation, discomfort, pain, depression, sadness, and in some cases, maybe even something hurtful to our physical health and well-being. because the dissonance comes, the more we put that separation, that space, that distance between who and what we really are and the stories that we fabricate in our lives. Frankly, I think Pinocchio got off easy. A big nose and a pair of donkey ears. The story of Pinocchio was written by Carlo Lorenzini. There are all kinds of people out there in the world who are all too eager, anxious, and ready to write our stories for us. And in Pinocchio's story, he's presented with all kinds of characters who lure him away with all kinds of distractions. And when people will write the stories for us, again, there will be similar types of characters in our lives. But there's an incredible amount of good news here, and that is that nobody owns the storyline. Nobody owns the movie rights to your life story. And regardless of where you are, how big the mess you're in, how deep the hole you might find yourself in, at any time, you could just step forward and assert your right to rewrite your story. And if you change the ending, if you change what it is that you really desire, what you really covet, everything begins to fall into place to bring you to that goal. The very first business trip I took to Brazil, I met a business associate for the first time, and I ended up being his house guest for 4 days. We got to know each other very well, and he was really successful. And he shared with me one night that he understood that much of his success had come to him because of the fabrications, that the lies, the stories that he had come up with in his life, and how he had fooled people and had fooled himself. And then one day he just had a talk with himself and he asked himself the very basic question, why lie? And from that point going forward, he never lied. And yes, being honest, his business didn't plummet. It tapered off a bit. But it didn't matter. He became real. He became authentic. And I remember when Daniel Namath was here doing a concert and he shared a bit of his personal story. He was a very successful business person working in the world in the Chicago area, making a fair amount of money. But he wasn't happy. And so he left all that to pursue his dream. This past week, when the lottery got to $1.6 billion, I admit I bought some tickets. And I want you all to know right here and now, had I won, I was going to give you each a dollar. But I took the ticket home, and before the drawing, I held the ticket, and I dreamed. It's a really fun exercise. You should try it. What would I do if I actually won what $1.6 billion? Well, obviously, I didn't win it because none of you have a dollar. But then I came to realize something, that among all of the dreams that I was dreaming, the ones that were really important, the ones that were really significant, I could pursue, and dollars were not necessary. And bearing false witness was not necessary. All that I had to do is show up and be as real as I possibly could be. Each and every one of you holds that same power. And in order to start to rewrite the stories, You have to deny the stories that you're currently living in. You have to set them free, cut them loose. You have to refocus again on who and what you truly are. This is the underlying spirit of these commandments. And then in the words of the song that Rob so beautifully sang for us this morning, you got to be you. I got to be me. We have to be who we are, because that's all that we have. And it doesn't sound like much, but it's everything.